This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo. And only two countries in the world thus far, Tajikistan and Turkmenistan, have made COVID-19 vaccines mandatory for all adults aged 18 and above, unless they have been medically exempted. But we've also seen many other countries making vaccinations mandatory for some sectors, you know, for example, healthcare workers, nursing home staff, or even employees working in high-risk jobs. Now, here in Malaysia, we are sort of slowly seeing more discussions about vaccine mandates, especially recently as we see, you know, vaccine uptake inching up. You know, the Human Resources Minister, M. Saravanan, has said that employers may mandate their employees to get vaccinated. Health Minister Khairi Jamaluddin also said that his ministry encourages sectoral mandates if they aren't against the law. But the question is, you know, how should employers or perhaps even policymakers sort of navigate this landscape, right? At what point, you know, can vaccine mandates be considered, if at all? So here to help me discuss today's topic is my guest, Munita Kaur, a lawyer and academician. Thank you so much for joining me today, Munita.
Thank you, Su-Ann.
Okay, so let's perhaps start with a broader picture, right? You know, the conversation about mandatory vaccinations is not exactly new, particularly if we look at things like childhood vaccinations. You know, we've seen some countries having made certain childhood vaccines mandatory, while others have also a no jab, no play policy where kids may not be enrolled in daycare or schools if they don't meet certain vaccinations, right? Even when it comes to travel, the yellow fever vaccine, for example, is needed by some countries before you travel, before you enter those countries. But at the same time, you know, vaccine mandates are not widespread at all. So why is that discussion when it comes to vaccine mandates so often fraught with controversy? And especially now, you know, with COVID-19, how is that changing discussions?
Okay. Now, when we talk about mandating vaccinations or mandate of anything for that matter, mandates are never politically popular. There is a trust deficit very often between citizens and governments and citizens and maybe authorities. And many feel that sometimes authorities tend to overstep. And whenever there is a mandate, very often it is actually viewed with a lot of suspicion, a lot of skepticism. So mandates have never historically been the way to promote vaccinations. Instead of mandates, usually education, trying to persuade, those have been the better ways in which to actually uptake vaccines generally. Now, with COVID, this vaccine is new. Mm-hmm. Many people have a trust deficit with it because of the time frame within which it was actually developed. Many people are concerned with the long-term implications of the vaccine. There's fake news, there's anti-vaxxers, there's religious, cultural considerations, which all actually add to the complexity of mandating this particular vaccine. And then, okay, there are also many who actually still underestimate the virus and rather take their chances with it than, you know, actually get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So mandating vaccines generally is a problem, and mandating this vaccine in particular may also be something that's not probably not the first thing that we want to go for.
So if we talk about sectoral mandates, for example, right, that has been raised by two ministers here in Malaysia. You know, first it was the Human Resources Minister, like I mentioned, M. Saravanan, who said that action may be taken against employees who refuse their jab. And this is under the Occupational Health Safety and Health Act for causing an unsafe workplace. Following that, Health Minister Khairi Jamaluddin said that he encourages it if it's not against the law. But legally, are employers allowed to make such mandates here in Malaysia?
Well, there's generally no law that allows them to do that, strictly speaking. And also, since the government has yet to mandate vaccines, then they don't really have the government backing as well. But as you mentioned, of course, there is the Occupational Safety and Health Act, OSHA, as we call it. Now, OSHA actually imposes an obligation on employers to take all reasonable and practicable steps to ensure the safety and health of at work of all employees. So when you come to employers, I guess each employer will have to actually assess within the industry and their own sector, what is the risk that is actually posed by the pandemic within their sector? You know, so is their sector one which, you know, there's a lot of interaction with public, you know, are they going to have, you know, a risk which is high of contracting, you know, and COVID, whether by their employees or actually, you know, by customers and so on. Now, then, of course, they have to focus on what kind of measures are available to minimize the risk. Is their sector one within which, you know, mask mandates, you know, contact tracing, you know, and those kind of, or testing, you know, whether those kind of things would be sufficient to minimize the risk. Then, of course, have they taken any reasonable steps to minimize, you know, have they make sure that they have, you know, have proper social distancing, maybe, you know, off and on work, right, shift work between the employees. So what steps have they actually taken? Then, of course, okay, they also have to look at, are there any repercussions or consequences, okay, for failing to take those reasonable steps? And of course, how important is a vaccinated workforce for their business sustainability? So if we're looking at, you know, healthcare workforce, I mean, you know, you have to have them vaccinated, maybe even homes, as you suggest, you know, perhaps teachers, because we have, our kids are not yet vaccinated. So each industry, so there cannot be a blanket yes and no. And I think each industry will actually have to weigh within its own sectors this variety of circumstances to actually decide at which point a mandate will actually be necessary for them.
I think when it comes to people like healthcare workers or teachers, there perhaps the public health argument or the occupational health and safety argument is clearer to people, right? Because they work with high-risk, vulnerable individuals, you know, patients who already have weaker immune systems, or patients who cannot be vaccinated. And then, of course, like you mentioned, Monita, kids who are yet to be able to be vaccinated, you know, especially when the vaccines are not approved for their age yet. So yes. I guess in those cases, there is a stronger rationale for vaccine mandates, right? But I guess specifically, what I'm interested as well, you know, in from the healthcare workers' perspective, for example, if they refuse COVID-19 vaccinations, does that contradict their Hippocratic oath or, you know, their promise to do no harm to patients?
Well, now this is, of course, an ethical question, all right? Because when you look at the Hippocratic Oath, it's basically an ethical obligation and not a legal obligation. So doctors are also human beings like everyone else, and they also owe, okay, a general, you know, common law duty not to cause foreseeable harm to people. So if they can foresee harm, you know, through their actions or inactions, then they would owe a duty not to do that. Now, in addition to that, they also have the ethical and professional obligation to do no harm to their patient. Now, by vaccinating our health care force is actually important also to protect the capacity of the health system. Because we don't want our healthcare force to be ill, because if we don't have them, then, you know, it's going to be worse for the people on the ground. Yeah. So we need them, okay, to be as fit as possible. Now, mandating or let's say vaccinating our healthcare force is actually not something that is new. Many doctors, you know, even medical students would know that if they will have to get, you know, basic vaccinations, okay, before they can actually get employed, all right, or go into medical school, all right. So it's actually a well-established policy that requires healthcare workers to actually get vaccinated. Now, if you, to the question whether, you know, a particular healthcare worker does not want to get vaccinated, then I think we need to examine or ask why, and we need to address their concerns. And there needs to be a supporting environment. But at the end of the day, it all really depends on how many of them are not taking the vaccine. You know, so I think that that is also something that's very important. If we have a bulk of healthcare workers that are refusing to take the vaccine, then maybe something more needs to be done, you know. But if it is the odd healthcare worker, then perhaps we need to engage and find out before we actually mandate and compel.
So then on the flip side of the argument in favor of vaccine mandates would be the argument against, the main argument against it would be personal liberty, right? How do we then balance, you know, occupational health and safety concerns, public health concerns with people's freedom to choose not to get vaccinated? And I guess especially when it comes to employers, right? How you know, can they balance those?
Well, personal liberty actually refers to a range of activities that we as citizens, okay, are or should generally be, okay, free to engage without any government restraint. So I would think that it includes things like freedom of expression, assembly, religion, mobility rights, okay, privacy rights, rights to self-determination. Now, just by looking at the list that I've actually put out there, we can immediately see how the pandemic has affected so many of these rights. Lockdowns, social distancing, mask mandates, contact tracing, vaccine passports, you know, are all examples of restrictions of personal liberties we have accepted as a way of life during this pandemic. Now, personal liberty is also not an absolute concept. And in a pandemic, when one person's action affects the well-being of others, so we actually require society to act collectively. Now, one person's freedom can be said to be another's unfreedom. You know, if a person's refusal to wear a mask or to get vaccinated, okay, results in others getting COVID-19, then their behavior is denying others the more fundamental right itself, which is the right to life. Now, however, whatever measures that are taken must be proportionate to the risk. Whether a vaccine mandate is a proportionate response is, of course, debatable. But with the pandemic still raging, vaccine mandate is beginning to sound more like a trade-off many people are willing to make.
And I guess, like you've mentioned before, right, there is that importance to not jump straight towards vaccine mandate. There is a need to look at the other steps in between, you know, like you said, incentivizing, for example.
Okay, so this incentivizing or trying to incentivize or coerce nicely people into taking the vaccine. Mm-hmm. Now, as I mentioned, you know, mandates should be the last resort. Coercive measures, okay, rarely are well received. Very often, you know, they have the opposite effect and people tend to resist even more. Now, we should actually try to pursue other means, as I've mentioned. But whether that includes incentives, I'm not actually quite sure. With already most people vaccinated, especially if you're talking about Malaysia, we have a very high, you know, uptake on vaccines. To reward those who still refuse to get vaccinated would seem quite unfair. You know, many people will say, well, how come? You know, so if you be difficult, then you are rewarded in some way or the other. So maybe not incentivizing, but perhaps, okay, what would be better is to engage those who are still reluctant, understand their concerns. Very important not to judge them, and most importantly, to continue to educate and persuade. So vaccine, you know, uptake is very encouraging in Malaysia. And so I think that if we move along the lines of continuing to educate our public and to persuade them with science, right, and evidence, I think that that should be the way to go for now at least.
All right. Let's go for a quick break now, Munita. I'm speaking to lawyer and academician Munita Kaur, and we're discussing vaccine mandates, you know, with possible considerations towards at least sectoral mandates of COVID-19 vaccinations in Malaysia. We're discussing what are the considerations that employers or perhaps even the government needs to take into account before moving forward with what should be the last resort when it comes to getting people vaccinated against COVID-19. We'll continue our discussion after a few quick messages. Keep it here on Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn with me, Lim Soo, and I'm speaking today to Munita Kaur, a lawyer and academician, on the ethics of vaccine mandates. You know, whether it is, you know, should that be something that we are jumping to at this point in time? Can employers or perhaps even the government consider it? Or is that something that we really should leave as the very last resort? Munita, before the break, you were saying that we need to do more to educate and persuade, right? Because we're sort of seeing that we are moving towards seeing that segment of society that remains unwilling to be vaccinated. But how do we know when we've come to that point when education and persuasion is no longer enough? You know, I guess, is there really a clear-cut line for employers or perhaps even for the government to look and say that, okay, maybe now it's time for vaccine mandates?
Well, I think it really depends because in Malaysia, I mean, I think we are fortunate enough, I would say, that we actually have not met with much resistance on the vaccine. Maybe initially with some, you know, hesitation, but with the, you know, a pandemic raging on and with our numbers being so high, we have actually seen that many people are willing to roll up their arms and take the vaccine. And so we have not, I guess, reached a stagnation point with our vaccine uptake. Now, when we reach that point, or if we reach that point, I think a lot will depend on how many holdouts, or what is the percentage of holdout that we actually have, and what is the impact of those who are holding out on the pandemic as a whole. So, for example, if we feel that, you know, a large population is already vaccinated, the pandemic is well controlled within Malaysia, you know, then, you know, to get those holdouts, to force them to get vaccinated may not be necessary, you know. But if you see that, like, for example, in some countries, in the US especially recently, you know, their vaccination had hit a stagnation point, you know, where they didn't have much uptake, and the pandemic is actually raging. So now, even in a country where, you know, personal liberty is actually fiercely defended, a lot of steps are being taken to actually, you know, make sure that people kind of comply with. So new guidelines are in place, you know, which are inching towards mandates in those countries. So whether we have actually reached that point in Malaysia yet, I would think not, because we still have encouraging numbers on a daily basis. So we will have to wait and see, I think, on that.
How important is trust and transparency, you know, between employers and employees, or between the public and the government, when it comes towards getting more people vaccinated? And I guess in that process before, you know, they reach that last resort of mandates?
Well, trust is vital to the success of any vaccination policy. Now, WHO itself, in its policy brief sometime in April, stated that there is a duty to carefully consider the effect a vaccine mandate would have on public confidence, public trust, science, and public trust in vaccinations generally. To trust a vaccine mandate, transparency is very, very important. How decisions are made, the basis on which those decisions were made, who were involved in making those decisions, is all information which must be made known. Reasonable efforts must also be made to engage affected parties, relevant stakeholders, and a final decision on a mandate should be both ethically and based on scientific evidence. So any mandate that falls short of this is going to meet resistance, going to be viewed skeptically.
And speaking of mandates, I guess it's also important that that we have clear and reasonable exemptions, right? Because there will be certain people who medically may not be able to get vaccinations.
Yes, I think it's very important, okay, to have, because we cannot mandate blanket, you know, vaccination for of everyone, because there are people who may have underlying factors that make the vaccine not suitable for them or conditions. So we need to take that into account. Now, whatever exceptions, however, that we put forward, they need to be clear, very clear. Okay, this is to prevent loopholes, to prevent abuse, okay, and to make sure that the mandate is applied in a coherent manner. Because the moment it's not applied in a coherent manner, then again, you will have a lot of suspicion with the mandate. So it's very, very important, yes.
So if we talk about mandates, then definitely, If a mandate is implemented, there will be repercussions, right, if people don't comply with it. And I guess here in Malaysia, we've sort of seen a bit of that. You know, recently, the education minister, Razie Jidin, said that about 2,500 teachers who had refused the COVID-19 vaccine will be reassigned instead of being allowed to conduct physical classes when schools resume. You know, of course, you will have people who say that's fair, people who say perhaps that's not enough, or people who say that, well, why should we be taking action in the first place? But so right. how do we balance those decisions between taking action against those who refuse vaccinations, but also being fair?
Well, I think it really depends on weighing the risk of allowing people who are unvaccinated to carry on those jobs, be teachers, okay, or in any other sector, and the individual freedom or the individual liberty there, right? So currently, as I mentioned earlier, the pandemic is still not under control. You know, that it's, you know, we still have high numbers, people are still very concerned. And especially if we are talking about teachers, parents are concerned, you know, and our students have been out of school for so long. And this has not just affected their educational needs, also their mental needs. Mm-hmm. You know, how long can you actually stare at a computer? Online education is not optimal. Young children have missed out on the interaction. And sometimes even the safety net that a school actually provides to a young child. So we need our children back in school. And so that has to be weighed against, you know, the measures that are taken then to actually say, okay, fine, if you don't want to take a vaccine, then you cannot come back to school. And I think that most people may view that as being a reasonable trade-off.
And that's in the case of people who are already under the employment of the government, right? For example, in this case. But yeah. So say if an employer is looking to hire new employees, can they include COVID-19 vaccinations as part of the conditions for employment?
Well, I think that if you are talking about recruiting new staff, you sure can, because this is a contract of employment, and in your contract of employment, you basically can list down conditions, you know, and often there are conditions. I mean, people have to go for x-rays, they have to do a blood test, you know, when you first start employment in certain sectors, you have to do those things. So yes, definitely, if you're starting off afresh, then, you know, most employers may want to actually include that in the contract.
Do you think that, I guess, Malaysian society at large is ready for vaccine mandates, considering that, you know, throughout this pandemic, I think there's been a lot of discussion on how Asian societies in particular tend to think more collectively, tend to behave more collectively, right? We think of the greater benefit that something would have to the public. And that's a discussion that's been had a lot when it comes to complying with restrictions to movement, staying at home, you know, how Asian societies have behaved compared to Western societies. But when it comes to vaccine mandates, do you think that we will be ready for that possibility if that happens?
Well, I think that it's not only about the mandate. I mean, I think if you asked this question at the beginning of the pandemic or a few months into the pandemic, many people would have actually resisted a mandate. And, you know, they would have been quite vocal about it. But patience with the pandemic is running thin. Patience with people who don't want to get vaccinated is actually running thin. Many people realize that the only way in which perhaps they can go back to some sort of normalcy is to get a vaccine and to control the pandemic. And in this sense, I mean, you mentioned that, you know, Asians are a little bit more compliant, you know, than perhaps Western countries. But even in the US, there was a recent COVID states project poll that was actually conducted. And it said that 64% of Americans now support mandatory vaccinations for everyone. And 70% actually support mandatory vaccinations as a requirement for boarding planes. So even the Western society has realized that, you know, we need to do something if this pandemic continues to affect not only our health, but our economy, our lives and livelihoods. And at some point, people want to get back to being normal. So it definitely would be tolerated a lot more today, I think, than if you asked this question a year or so back.
I think I see also, I also see this as part of that discussion of people wanting to shift that responsibility, because I think thus far in the pandemic, the responsibility has always been on the individual who's worried about COVID-19 to keep themselves safe. You know, if I'm scared of contracting COVID-19, then I stay at home. I take all the necessary precautions regardless of what others are doing. But with vaccinations rising, with more people vaccinated and people realizing how that is part of the solution towards ending the pandemic, I think a lot of people are having that discussion that we need to push that responsibility more onto people who refuse to be vaccinated, because they are putting even those who are vaccinated or those who cannot get vaccinated at risk. And I guess the vaccine or discussions about vaccine mandates is part of that shift of responsibility, right? I guess, what do you think about that? You know, do we need to place more responsibility on people who aren't who are choosing to not get vaccinated?
Okay. I will actually go back to a point that I made earlier as well. Of course, if we have holdouts on vaccine, people who are not willing to take up the vaccine, I think our patience with them would probably be also running quite thin at this moment. Now, but at this stage, we still have good numbers of people who are going out to get themselves vaccinated. Number one. Number two, I think it also depends on whether we actually have enough vaccines for everyone. So make sure that, you know, people are not getting vaccinated or our numbers are low, not because people are not going out to get vaccinated, but because, you know, our supply with the vaccine is not there. So we must have adequate supply to make sure that, you know, if anyone wanted to be vaccinated, they can actually be vaccinated. So if those two things are there, that there are people still who want to get vaccinated and we have the vaccines, and the only issue is, you know, how many jabs can we get into arms on a daily basis, then I think we're still at the stage where we are all in this together and we're all taking, and there's no, you know, the vaccinated against the unvaccinated. So again, I think until we reach that point where we know how many people, or at least what is the percentage of holdouts and how these holdouts are actually affecting us, whether they are prolonging the pandemic, you know, whether they are risking, okay, people, then only then I think we can actually make a decision of, you know, shifting more responsibility on them.
Mm. So before we end, you know, I want to circle back to the legal aspect, right? So for example, if a government, if the Malaysian government does decide to mandate vaccinations, will this require specific laws to be passed?
Well, currently, we already have those laws on the books. If you look at the Prevention and Control of Infectious Disease Act 1998, Section 11 actually already allows for mandates. And in fact, should there be a mandate, any refusal, okay, is actually an offence under the Act itself. Mm. So the law is already there on the books if they really wanted to do this. But whether they will need to refine it and additional steps, and depends on what kind of policy they come up with, you know, whether there are any other sanctions, whether, you know, you want to trace those who have not been vaccinated, then of course, you know, you may have to get other stuff done. But in terms of the mandate itself, they can actually do it right now because there's already power for them to actually do that.
Mm. But before that, you know, of course, like you said, we really have to push more to get people vaccinated, whether it's on the issue of adequate supplies of vaccines or really just tackling misinformation, right? I think that's such that's still such a huge issue.
Yes, definitely misinformation is a huge issue. And in this era where, you know, information is available on your fingertips, everyone is a journalist and author, you know, disseminator of information, you know, and people don't think twice before they, you know, sometimes click the share button or, you know, forward stuff. We need to tackle the misinformation. And that's why transparency is very important. Trust within the system is very important. And I think throughout the pandemic, we have seen all over the world that there is a trust deficit between citizens and their governments. Mm-hmm. And very often, you know, and that trust deficit is something that people who want to spread fake news or want to spread misinformation feed on, because you don't have trust. So it's easy to, you know, make you believe things that I want you to believe in. So I think, yes, we really, really need to tackle misinformation.
Hmm. Before we end, Munisa, I guess bringing the conversation back to employers and employees as well, right? Would you have a message or I guess, or perhaps advice for employers when sort of before they go to that last resort of mandating COVID-19 vaccinations for their employees and to get more employees to trust in vaccines and to get themselves vaccinated? What should employers consider?
I think you can't really shift the burden on employers. I mean, employers are just, you know, trying to save their own businesses as well. Mm-hmm. And they are trying to get, you know, the job done as well. I think the burden is more on the government, you know, scientific community as a whole. All right. And definitely, you know, part of that is cracking down on misinformation, all right, and making sure that we give people enough transparent information for them, you know, to feel secure enough to actually take the vaccine. Now, whether we will get everyone convinced, probably not, you know, but we hope that with each education platform, with each, you know, persuasion, that we're able to get a few more and a few more. And hopefully, you know, we have enough people who are vaccinated that we can actually start to look at the back end of the pandemic.
Mm. Do you think we need to accept that we can't convince 100% of the population to take the COVID-19 vaccine, you know, or are we sort of stuck on that idea?
I don't think you can convince everyone. And this is not just with the COVID vaccines. I mean, just vaccinations generally, even childhood vaccinations. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we have a very high uptake, but it's not 100% uptake. And those vaccines have been there for some time, you know, and yet there are people who do not, you know, take up those vaccines for their children. So, no, I don't think, I mean, if we can, that would be wonderful, but mm-hmm. I don't think that that should be the barometer against which we should gauge success.
Mm, definitely. And hopefully, you know, we are getting there and we will get there where we see a significant population vaccinated and we don't need to, you know, resort to what is the last resort, you know, COVID-19 vaccine mandates.
Yes, very true. Let's hope that, you know, the numbers have been really encouraging. Let's hope we can vaccinate our kids soon and the numbers would be even better. And hopefully we don't have to take the mandate, vaccine mandate route.
All right. Thank you so much for talking to me today, Minita.
Thank you, Sue-Ann.
I've been speaking to Minita Kaur, a lawyer and academician, on COVID-19 vaccine mandates, both on a sectoral basis as well as on a larger scale, whether a blanket vaccine mandate should be considered and at what point could it be considered and why it should be a last resort. If you missed any part of today's show, you can download the podcast on bfm.my or on the BFM app. I'm Lim Suan and this has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.